Hello again and welcome to this edition of the Hick Chick Chat. I'm Leah Guffey, the Hick Chick. Last week, while I was driving into town and listening to my former radio station's morning show, AM Springfield, I heard Senator Dick Durbin. Senator Durbin has been a regular guest on AM Springfield with Sam Madonia and was also one of my regular noon show guests. Now, while you're listening to Sam and Senator Durbin sit back, relax, and talk, they're going to discuss some things that they talked about last week, such as the election, the upcoming election in November, his recent trip to Ukraine, and the passage of the Farm Bill. Plus, there's some local chatter as well. Let's listen in to Senator Durbin and AM Springfield host Sam Madonia.
Yes, Senator Durbin, you were in town for election night.
I was up in Chicago for election night and made my way back here yesterday to Decatur and Peoria, and now headed down south to Scott Air Force Base.
How surprised were you? Look on the other side. Your opponent is going to be Mr. Oberweis. How surprised were you? I thought that Mr. Truax ran a fairly credible race against Jim Oberweis.
Well, he sure did, because the early polls showed Mr. Oberweis with a huge lead, 52-15. When it was all over, I think he may have won by 10 or 12 points. So Truex, who had no money and was out for the first time running, picked up a lot of votes. He was moving forward toward the end there, and Oberweis was holding his own.
We know you're going to talk from a Democrat standpoint, understandably so, but I also was impressed by Erica Harrell getting over 40% in a congressional race here in central Illinois against Rodney Davis. That's pretty impressive for our lady Erica Harrell.
Yes, it is. And we had a race on our side with Ann Callis,
yes,
the Democratic candidate, and I can't remember the exact numbers, Sam, as I sit here. She won over George Gollin. George was very popular over in Champaign County, where he was a professor at the university. It's going to be a good contest come November.
I think it's one of the best in the nation for that congressional seat. Tell me about Ann Callis, little we don't know about her.
Well,
if you will, you Metro East area, you probably know her pretty well.
I do, and I endorsed her, and I don't do that a lot in primaries, and because it's my home district, I feel pretty strongly about this. She's extraordinary. You look at her and you say, this can't be true. This woman was a chief judge in Madison County. It was true. Chosen in that capacity, she brought some real change and reform to the judiciary down there and created a veterans court. What it does when veterans are charged mainly with nonviolent crimes and things, it gives them a second chance, and it's worked very, very well. And she was behind that effort. So the other thing in her commercial, most people may remember, is the surprise at the end when she's talking about veterans and says, you know, I take this personally because I'm an Army mom, and she's standing next to her son, who's a Ranger in the U.S. Army, and you think, Ann, you've got a son that old? And it's true. She's, I think, a great candidate.
Let's talk about another race you'll be familiar with. Congressional race. Sherry Bustos is going to have another challenge again in that general election. That's Jean Callahan's daughter. She's had a pretty good first term in Congress.
She's had a great first term. And I always say I'm a little partial to Sherry. My son called me when Sherry ran the first time. Paul's a lawyer up in Chicago. He said, Dad, how do you say no when someone calls and asks for a contribution if that someone used to babysit you? It turns out that Sherry Callahan, now Sherry Bustos, close friend of the family, babysat our kids, but she has really matured into an excellent congressperson, a congresswoman, and she's running against Bob Schilling, who was the former congressman, so we don't take that for granted.
Tell me what you know about Bruce Rauner, how he had a press conference yesterday, brought some people over,
sure,
Democrats who are going to support him in a campaign or so on. I think he's a legitimate contender for that governor's race.
Well, of course he is, and
sure,
he has to be viewed that way. I've never met him.
Okay.
I've only met Mr. Oberweis once. So
okay,
I have not run into him. I have met his wife, Diane Rauner. His wife is the head of a group called Ounce of Prevention, where they take teenage moms and give them a chance to learn how to be good mothers, get their lives on the right track, and especially grab those babies as fast as they can and get them into a development plan. So I've toured her school up in Chicago, and I think she may vote on my side of the ticket more often than not. But I know Diane, but I don't know Mr. Rauner.
Help me out, but what's going on at Scott Air Force Base? Are you going down there today? What's
well,
going on?
It's a big deal. You
okay
know, if you get south of I-80, Scott Air Force Base is one of is the biggest federal employer for sure, and one of the biggest employers downstate. It is a huge source of economic activity and national defense right there outside of Belleville near Muskoda. So we've got General Mark Welsh coming in. He is the commander-in-chief of the U.S. Air Force, and we want to take a look at Scott, where it is today and where it's going. We're going to face a president asking for another base closure commission. We want to make sure we're ready to stop any talk about going after Scott Air Force Base. Secretary Gates, used to be the Secretary of Defense, he said Scott Air Force Base is one of the top three most important Air Force bases in America. So we want to get behind this on a bipartisan basis, united behind Scott Air Force Base.
Tell me about that. That has been talked about at times, be moved and so on. You have been incredibly important in making sure Scott Air Force Base not only stays open, but becomes very, very important to the whole system.
Well, and it is. And the most important thing, Sam, if you go down there and take a look around, you may not even see a fraction of what it does. Most of what's going on at Scott Air Force Base is in the whole area of information technology and logistics. They are wired in a way like most other Air Force bases would love to be wired, to provide information and move things across America. In addition to that, though, we want them to have flying missions that grow. And we have a new tanker coming on, the KC-46, and we want Scott Air Force Base to be a siding for that.
Did anybody see the Russian Putin-Ukraine thing coming on, Senator? Did that come just like a bolt out of the sky?
It did. And the interesting thing about it, Sam, is here was Vladimir Putin in Sochi at the Olympics with this charm offensive, wandering through the crowds and showing up and saying, this is the modern Russia, we are the new civilized nation, and take a look at Sochi. As soon as they extinguish the Olympic flame, he moves his troops out of Sochi and invades Crimea. And now it's taken it over. I don't need to tell you, with your Lithuanian blood and my Lithuanian blood, we've seen this movie before, where the Russians, used to be Soviets, move into some innocent little country and just overwhelm them. So I was in Ukraine last week with John McCain. There were eight senators. We were just there for 48 hours to tell this new government we stand behind them. Now, we're not sending in troops. They're not asking, we're not sending. But there are ways that we can put pressure on Putin to stop this.
Will the economic sanctions work, and what if he tries to retaliate against sanctions against us?
Well, he's already started. You know, the president came out with a list of people in his government and wealthy people in Russia that are going to have a tough time traveling in the United States. We could do more along those lines. Putin came out with a list of Americans now who couldn't travel in Russia. I was on the preliminary list, but I didn't make the final list. And were this not a Soviet-style decision, I'd ask for a recount, because I think I ought to be on this enemies list. I don't quite understand that.
Affordable health care coming to a deadline. It appears to be more and more people are signing up. Give me your take on it.
I think we're getting better at it. Listen, it isn't perfect. There are many ways that we need to address changes in it, and I'm all for that. But when you look at some of the basic things, and your listening audience today, I'll bet you every family has somebody in the family with some kind of medical condition. And it used to be these pre-existing conditions, a child's diabetes, a wife who survived a cancer scare, you know, would disqualify you from health insurance or drive the cost to the high heavens. Now you can't discriminate against people because of pre-existing conditions. You can't have lifetime limits on what coverage will be there if you're diagnosed with cancer, for example. These are things that I think should be basic, and they're part of affordable care. And people who want to repeal those, some say, let's just get rid of it entirely. You're giving up on protections every family needs.
Senator, what are going to be the major issues between you and your opponent in November's senatorial race? Where do you differ on what are the major issues? His approach, philosophy of government, as opposed to yours?
Mr. Oberweis has been a candidate five times for major office, so his positions are pretty well documented. He is in favor of privatizing Social Security. I'm against it. This notion that we can give people some kind of an IRA or 401k and they don't need Social Security, listen, 10 years ago, the bottom fell out of the stock market. People lost a third of their retirement. If that happened to a person under Mr. Oberweis's approach in the year they wanted to retire, stay at work, buddy. You can't retire. So I think that's a bad idea. Cutting Medicare, bad idea. I think we need to have a minimum wage that says if you go to work and work hard every day, you're not going to be living in poverty. So those are three things we disagree with. I think Social Security needs to be strong for generations to come, Medicare as well. And I think, you know, working families in this state, every state deserve a fighting chance.
Give me an update as far as the railroad relocation, 3rd Street to 10th Street. Are you comfortable how that is progressing?
Well, we've had good luck here.
Yes.
Mayor Houston and Chairman Van Meter were out last week in Washington and with the business leaders in the community. And we have secured Tiger grants, special federal grants, which I tried to help a little bit with. You know, Ray LaHood was there, and he knew how to find Springfield. So we were able to secure some of that money to help us on this. And we're moving forward. This is a long-term commitment, but it's going to change the face of Springfield. And it means all the train traffic coming through is not going to end up with traffic snarls around the center of the city.
Senator, speaking of moving forward, how's the president doing? I mean, obviously there's a major congressional senatorial election in November, and then, of course, he's looking. Is it difficult? Is he challenged to keep motivated and stay focused and keep moving ahead, knowing that the end is in sight?
He surprises me, because there are many times I would just get frustrated, maybe even angry, with what he faces. You know, if he says the sun's up, there are a majority on either side to say, nope, the sun just set. And it reaches a point. He really is steady as you go, and that's important. But this is a critical election. We've got to make sure at the end of this election that we still have some balance in Washington. Right now we have a Republican House, a Democratic president, and a Senate which doesn't have 60 votes for either party. So it goes, you know, we have to do things in a bipartisan fashion. Mark Kirk comes back from his medical challenge with a stroke. He and I have done more things together since he came back because, you know, we kind of both said, let's kind of set aside the labels. What can we do together? And if we have bipartisanship, at least in the Senate, I hope, it's going to be, I think, good for the state.
What keeps the 60 vote intact, in play, in the Senate? Because eventually the tide is going to turn, probably, and it's going to impact the other party as much as it is impacting you folks. Give me a little history of that, and what keeps it in play?
Well, here's what it boiled down to. When we created the Senate, I shouldn't say we, the forefathers, in the Constitution, they said every state gets two senators, whether it's tiny Rhode Island or big California.
Right.
And so the Senate has always been kind of this, we protect the minority. And if you're a small state, you won't get run over by the House of Representatives. And that is really kind of the principle and value behind the 60-vote rule. I think it's abused. We're using it way too much now. It used to be used sparingly. And we don't want to have deadlock. You know, it took us two tries. We passed in the Senate the Farm Bill, sent it over the House. They just couldn't pass it. Finally, they did. Immigration reform. We sit down, four Democrats, four Republicans. We write a good compromise bill. John McCain, myself, and others, we write this bill. Send it over to the House. They won't even bring it up for a vote. And that troubles me. So when we can finally get through the 60-vote hurdle and come up with something bipartisan, I think the House owes us a vote, up or down. Give us a chance.
Appreciate you coming out.
Always.
Ken Leonard, by the way, football coach. He's going to go ahead and take you for a spin on that Corvette.
No, well, I want to tell you something. Ken and I really need to improve our images, don't you think?
Yes.
That Corvette.
Well, he does. I'm not sure about you.
How about that championship coach, Ken Leonard? What do you think of
He's
this guy?
As good as it gets.
He absolutely
And
is.
I got you to sing Lincoln Lincoln before this is all over. Yeah. Maybe my rail splitters are actually going to win a state tournament. We'll see.
Did we mention Rochester in the process of great football
you
coaches?
You just did.
Yeah.
You just did that. Was there any doubt you were going to seek another term? Did you ever have any thoughts?
Yeah, I sat down with my wife.
You know,
we reached
a
point where we needed to reflect on it. And I think the big deal was we got two of the greatest grandkids in the world.
Yep.
They're 2.5 years old. And I'm doing this because I'm honored to have the job. And it still excites me. I get up every morning and think of some things I can do to make this a better state. And but my wife, Loretta, God bless her, has put up with this for a while. And she said, all right, let's do it. And we are.
We were talking about first checks, how we never forget them. Mine was $5,200 to teach at Lincoln High School. Remember the first job and the first amount you worked for?
Never forget it. $15,000 a year, fresh out of law school, 1969. Drove a U-Haul truck with my earthly belongings and a dog out from Washington. Parked in behind Stevie Walko's music shop there on 2nd Street. He was a distant relative of our family. And moved into a little house at 2604 South State Street with our one baby and one on the way. And I'll never forget it.
Who'd you work for?
Lieutenant Governor Paul Simon.
There
first job out of law school.
Great school. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Sam.
Always good to see you.
Thanks for listening to The Hick Chick Chat. I'm your host, Leah Guffey, The Hick Chick. You can find me on Twitter and Facebook.